Hello, I'm Lawrence Knight. Welcome to Business Daily from the BBC. Today, we mark a changing of the guard at one of the world's most important financial institutions. At the European Central Bank, it's out with the old.
He should be remembered for saving the Eurozone.
And in with the new.
One of her greatest skills is communication. She will be much more visible to the public.
But as Christine Lagarde prepares to take over from Mario Draghi, is she inheriting another crisis in the making? That's all on Business Daily from the BBC. He's known as Super Mario after the Nintendo video game hero. But on Thursday this week, Mario Draghi will be hanging up his plumber's cap as he steps down as president of the European Central Bank after 8 years in charge. It has been a tumultuous 8 years. First, he had to extinguish a financial conflagration that threatened to send the entire single currency up in smoke. Then there came the much harder grind of reviving a stagnant European economy at a time when the Eurozone's 23 national governments showed no interest in helping out by spending more money. And he did it through some fairly extraordinary and controversial policy interventions. By comparison, his last ever press conference in charge, which he held last week, was a rather tepid affair. The BBC's economics correspondent Andrew Walker sat through the whole thing.
I think he would regard it as having gone pretty well. I mean, he focused on defending the policy decisions that the ECB took actually at the previous meeting, but which have generated some dissent within the governing council. He actually referred to two individuals on the governing council, not by name, he didn't tell us who they were, as dissenters.
But it sounds like it was pretty dry, which I guess is par for the course for an ECB press conference.
Well, he did, I think, smile a little bit more than usual. But yeah, there was a lot of highly technical stuff. And I will admit that some of my colleagues do regard it as something of a standing joke that I don't always find it the easiest thing to maintain concentration all the way through his press conferences.
Stay awake, though.
I do usually stay awake. And it must be said they come at a time of day that's not ideal for those purposes, essentially just after lunch.
Now, Draghi's been there for 8 years. And when he took up the role, it was in the middle of a gigantic financial crisis. It was quite a baptism of fire for him, wasn't it?
It was indeed. And people who defend his legacy would regard that as his most important achievement. When he took office, the very existence of the Eurozone was in doubt. Today, I don't think it is really. He made a famous speech in London, actually, outside the Eurozone, where his comments were seen as a commitment to buy the government debt of countries whose borrowing costs were essentially unsustainable. And do you know how much the ECB actually spent under that programme?
Not a single euro.
Not a single euro. Now, when central banks go into the financial markets, it's sometimes known as open market operations. This was a classic example of a successful open mouth operation. He said what they were prepared to do, and because he said it, they didn't actually need to do it.
Within our mandate, the ECB is ready to do whatever it takes to preserve the euro. And believe me, it will be enough.
And the markets really did turn around after that, didn't they?
That's right. At the time, one or two countries, and I'm thinking particularly of Greece, Spain, Italy, had government borrowing costs that really couldn't be sustained for the long term. The rule of thumb that was sometimes used at the time was 10-year government borrowing costs of in excess of 7%. If you look at things today, the figure for Greece is less than 1.5%, and for Spain and Italy, it's actually below 1%. An utterly extraordinary transformation.
Yeah, and he earned the epithet Super Mario after the Nintendo character.
Indeed he did. Now, Super Mario is a plumber, and what Mr. Draghi was seen as doing was basically fixing the plumbing of the Eurozone.
And in a way, when he came into that role, he was the ideal candidate to do exactly that, because he had worked in the financial system as well as being an economist. So he understood the plumbing very well in a way that perhaps some of his colleagues didn't.
That's right. He'd been an academic. He'd also worked for Goldman Sachs in the financial system, and he had been governor of the Italian Central Bank. So, yeah, it's hard to think of a better curriculum vitae to have when you're going into that kind of job.
Now we have Christine Lagarde taking over, a very different character with a very different background.
Yes, her background actually is as a lawyer and then a politician. She has been French finance minister and then went to run the International Monetary Fund.
So she takes over this Friday. What's going to be in her inbox? What is Draghi handing over to her?
Well, in terms of actually having to do something, Draghi's kind of set things in motion for the foreseeable future. He announced a big programme of further stimulus at the September meeting. So I would not expect her to be taking any dramatic action soon, just keeping a wary eye out for the consequences of her predecessor's initiatives.
Meanwhile, Draghi, do we know what he's going on to do?
We don't know what he's going on to do. And if you take at face value what he said at his closing press conference, he doesn't either.
Generally speaking, I don't have any set idea about that. But if you want more information, just ask my wife. She would know.
A touch of sexism there. Or perhaps just a man who has spent every waking moment for the last 8 years thinking about nothing but monetary policy. As Andrew was saying, Draghi's promise to do whatever it takes proved a pivotal moment in the crisis. Someone who witnessed it firsthand was the famous bond investor Mohamed El Erian, who now acts as the chief economic advisor to Allianz and is the incoming president of Queen's College, Cambridge University.
Yes, I was in the room when Mario Draghi said those famous words. It was a day in July. I was sitting and he was to my left among lots of other people. And it went totally off script and it did get our attention. But I don't think any of us realize what pivotal words those were.
Do you think his colleagues or even he himself knew when he went in to give that speech that he was going to say that?
So I'm not sure whether he knew, but I'm pretty sure that his colleagues on the Governing Council were as surprised as the rest of us were. My understanding is that when Mario Draghi went back to Frankfurt, that was not an easy conversation.
I'll bet.
The context was really important. It was a horrible day for European bonds. They call it the death spiral, that as interest rates go up because perceived risk is deteriorating, to refinance yourself costs a lot more. At the same time, the value of the outstanding bonds go down. Who owns the outstanding bonds? Your banks mainly. So suddenly you also have a banking problem. As people worry about the banks, the risk spreads even higher. And next thing you know, you're in this death spiral that's very difficult to get out of.
So it's kind of panic.
It is panic and it's self-fueling and it's very hard to break. He should be remembered for saving the Eurozone. I think that he will be remembered not just for that, but also for a giant experiment that followed. And that is the experiment of negative interest rates in order to promote economic growth and inflation.
Because the Eurozone is not the first country to introduce negative interest rates, meaning that people who deposit money with the central bank have to pay interest on their deposits. But the Eurozone was the first really major currency to do that, wasn't it?
Correct. And now it is at the forefront of an experiment that many people worry will have long-lasting damage, not just on the financial system, but also on behavior, on financial stability, and on the economy.
Over the years, did you get the chance to know Draghi personally at all?
I've been in meetings with Mario Draghi, and he always comes across as incredibly well-prepared. And he was exposed to quite a bit of criticism. And a lot of it was badly informed criticism. So it's not easy to take. But he's very cool. He maintains focus.
I mean, there was even one occasion where a protester jumped onto the desk in front of him midway through a press conference and showered him in confetti.
End! End! Leave that be! Dictatorship!
he just sat back and looked up. There was no major panic. The security people took the protester away, and he continued as if nothing had happened.
And Draghi has come under quite a bit of personal attack in the German media in particular for the low interest rates for German savers. Do you feel like that some of that criticism is a bit unfair?
No, I think it's totally unfair. And the attacks have been quite vicious. I remember one of the German newspapers had him on the front page as Count Mario Dracula and had him look like Dracula. And the idea is that he was sucking the blood out of the savings of the average German. I think what people have not understood fully is that the ECB did not do this out of choice. They did it out of necessity. They feared that with no one else stepping up to their responsibilities, the economy would go into recession, and at that point, the debt problems would come back. Unfortunately, they cannot go forward more, because at this point, if they were to do even more, it would be counterproductive. They certainly cannot go back, because the markets would take that very badly. And where they are right now is very uncomfortable, because they're under enormous political attack. So it's a very bad situation that was not really of their own creation.
And this is the situation that Draghi is now handing over to his successor, Christine Lagarde. But interestingly, Christine Lagarde has a very different background to Draghi. It's much more in technocratic politics. Do you think she's actually got quite a good background to tackle it?
Yes, I do. Draghi has left her the next 6 months on autopilot. So she doesn't have to come in and make really difficult monetary policy decisions. And that will allow her to focus on a couple of things that speak enormously to both her absolute and comparative advantage. The Eurozone is meant to be a stool with four legs. And in effect, it's a stool with one and a half legs. So it's inherently unstable. The one leg that is complete is monetary union. The second leg that is half complete is banking union. Now, she can work hard to complete that leg, but also that the two other legs that are not under the direct purview of the ECB, but Christine Lagarde in particular, can have an impact on, and that is fiscal integration and better political coordination. If you can get those four legs completed, then the structural stability of the Eurozone improves.
What if she fails, though? Is there a risk now that the ECB is running out of ammunition and we could see another loss of confidence?
So I would go one step further. The ECB has run out of ammunition. And therefore, if, God forbid, Europe hits a big pothole and ends up in recession, it will not be able to do very much. So if she's not able to strengthen the architecture, and if she's not able to convince those with better policy tools to step up to their responsibility, the ECB will be blamed. And that will tarnish not only her credibility, but it also will tarnish Mario Draghi's legacy.
So it sounds like the next 6 months are pretty critical then.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that she fully understands what's at stake. Ultimately, this is a political decision, but she has lived in that world. She has very good political relationships. So she brings a set of attributes and experiences that are very well qualified for what's needed.
Mohamed El Erian. So it sounds like Christine Lagarde has her work cut out, in particular, the need to bend ears and win over sceptics in Germany. She may have an ally in the new German ECB board member, Isabel Schnabel. She tweeted last week that Germany shouldn't use the ECB as a scapegoat. How scary that German politicians from various sides even try to benefit from such moods. But why has there been so much scepticism in Germany towards the European Central Bank? It's a question I put to Jana Rando, economic editor at Bloomberg in Frankfurt.
Germany is quite a rich country when you compare it to the likes of Portugal, Greece, and a very fiscally prudent country. What they don't want to see is their money going into these countries and disappear into nothing. Draghi was a very controversial president from the very beginning. Germany believed at the time that it was their turn to have an ECB president. You had a lot of prejudices against Draghi in the beginning.
Because he was Italian?
Because he was Italian and because people thought he couldn't be trusted. Italy has a track record of inflation. It has very high public debt, everything that runs completely against the German DNA.
And these divisions over the direction of the Eurozone, they were reflected within the ECB boardroom as well.
Yes, certainly what we've seen since the September meeting is extreme. I cannot remember a rift of that scale.
So this is since the latest big package of policies have been brought in by Draghi. How do you expect all of this to change with the appointment of Christine Lagarde and indeed many other new members of the governing board?
Christine Lagarde is somebody who knows the challenges very, very well. And one of her greatest skills is communication. She will be much more visible to the public, trying to win the trust of the people who she will set monetary policy for.
But perhaps the biggest challenge she faces is there's not actually that much the ECB can do anymore. What really needs to happen is in the hands of politicians now, particularly the German authorities. Do the authorities in Germany accept that something needs to change?
I think so. Now, you will never get a central banker to say he or she is out of tools. That will not happen ever. But you're right. They have also stepped up their calls on governments to do their job. And as far as the German government is concerned, I think you see some movement there. What I don't expect is a big billion euro investment program without the economy deteriorating a lot further.
There are fears, which we heard earlier from Mohamed El Erian, that the Eurozone remains vulnerable to another crisis, especially if the economy slips back into recession. Do policymakers believe that it may have to take another crisis for change to happen?
That's a fair question, because as sad as it is, Europe only improves during crisis. You saw that very well during the Greek episode. There is still a lot to do, you're right. Hopefully, it'll happen without a big crash.
Jana Rando there, and let's hope she's right. Well, that's it from today's Business Daily. If you have any thoughts on today's programme, do tweet me at LHKnightBBC or at BBC World Biz. Tomorrow, Katie Prescott is in the hot seat, talking about whether aviation fuel can ever be made green.
Hello, this is Jackie Leonard from the Global News Podcast. And this week, with the UK and EU still in turmoil over Brexit, we're bringing you a very special episode. Over the last couple of years, the BBC's Brexit cast has been one of the most popular podcasts in Britain.
It's the political equivalent of going to your local aquarium and pressing your face up against the glass. And the kind of the political piranhas are just the other side of the screen.
It's presented by some of our leading political reporters.
It's not going to happen in a rush, and I would imagine there'll be quite some posturing.
But it's got an irreverent and entertaining tone that has appealed to listeners who are both fascinated and bewildered by Brexit.
I was being told by the end of the week, but
oh, really?
People have told me so many things that turn out to not be true, I don't believe anyone anymore.
Over the last few weeks, listeners to the Global News Podcast from around the world have been sending in their Brexit questions.
We don't want this, we don't want this, and we don't know what we want.
And in our special episode, we will be putting them to the Brexit Cast team.
What are they going to say? You guys must know.
So, for a global perspective on Brexit, with answers from people who are living and breathing this stuff at the moment, hop over to the Global News Podcast feed and look for the Global News Brexit Cast.
Anything could happen, we know that.
Search for Global News Podcast in all the usual poddy places and you will find the Global News Brexit Cast a little way down our feed.
I think this is it.